Oh, thank you very much, Doreen. Lovely to see everybody. And it's just so heartwarming. Such a wonderful turnout. And that the ladies have come together to learn. And I'm sure many of you know that we have a regular Monday morning learning programme. But for Pesach, we wanted to do something special. And have this wonderful lunch and have two parts of the programme. So when I was discussing with Mel, how should we approach it? So one part is, sorry, I'll stand up so everybody can see me. One part is going to be sort of insights into that. So it's not a model seder today, don't worry. I won't be asking like a cheder. Okay, will you now do this bit? No. Yeah, it's just so that we're going to look into the Haggadah. And we're working out, should we do that first or should we do practical getting ready for Pesach issues first? We decided, because there may be more questions on the practical getting ready for Pesach side, I'd do the insights. I mean, no, it's the other way around, because normally you've got to get everything ready for Pesach first, and then, hopefully, if you're not too tired, and that's very important, by the way, that we're not so tired. When I say we, I mean, I'm hoping that you will all, you wonderful ladies, get the assistance you need, depending on your yes, household yeah. situation, so it doesn't all fall on you, he says. Yeah, see, I know how to mind my P's and Q's. Yeah. So normally, you'd think about all the practical first, and then Haggadah. But we thought we'd do the other way around, so that way it allows more time for questions in the second half, particularly as I might have to curtail things a little bit, because sadly I've got a funeral this afternoon, but we're going to try and, what I may do is kind of take questions as we go along in part two, and that way I want to make sure everybody's questions are covered. But to begin with, we're going to have a look at the Haggadah. Now, of course, we're all familiar with the Haggadah. Every year, this is how we follow the Seder service. But the incredible thing is, and I've always wondered this, have you noticed every year there's a new Haggadah out? Even though it's the same text. So one joke is that last year's Rosha, you know, the rebellious son, is now a reformed character and written their own Haggadah. So now you've got new insight. But the truth is the Haggadah is jam-packed. Koshla Pesach jam, of it. Koshla Pesach jam-packed with insights. New insights. Things that we may have not heard before. If we've heard them before, it's good to hear them again. Okay? So as we are going to kind of have our meal in the middle, We're not going to do all of the Haggadah, but we're going to do the first part. So the whistle stop through the first part, leading up to the meal, which is very appropriate, because then halfway through we're going to have our meal, you see. All right. So we're going to start off with a part which I thought everybody does, but I spoke to some people who don't necessarily do this. People think you start the Seder with what? Kiddush. Many people start with Kiddush. Okay, I can see people nodding. It's good. I don't start the Seder with Kiddush, and many other people don't start with, but some people do, to be fair, because everybody's got their own custom. So, Rabbi, but surely the first thing you do, everybody, you pour the first cup, and everybody has Kiddush, right? Well, if you look at that, in typical Shul fashion, we've got more than one Haggadah on the go. So, if you're using this one, we're on page 4. And if you're using this one, which looks very old, it works out to be, although there's no page number, it's page 7. I know that because you turn over the page and the face one is page 9. Yeah? So you're either on page 7 of this type or page 4. I think most people are using this type. And what you can see there is the order of the Seder. So you might think that is just kind of mapping out what we're going to do. But many people treat it as the beginning of the Seder. And I know the kids in Leeds would always sing it to a Purim tune. The idea being that Purim precedes Pesach, and we're preparing for Pesach once we come from Purim. And so there's the song that goes, Chag Purim, Chag Purim. So they sing it to Kadesh Urchatz, Karpas Yachatz, Magid Rochza, Motzi Matza. Marokorech Shulchan Orech Safun Borech Hallel Nirtzah. So it's entirely up to you because you have your well-respected customs. But you might say, you know, Rabbi Kleiman sings it. Do you, anybody fancy having little sings? Up to you. You'll judge your crowd accordingly. I'm not being prescriptive. I'm not a spirit. Now, there is a more traditional tune which goes something like, Kadesh Urchatz Karpas. I can see Dory go, that's not the tune we're doing. Karpas Yachatz Magid Rochza Motzi Matza Maro Korech Shulchan Orech Tzafun Barech Halel Nirtza. Is that close to what you're used to, Doreen? Yeah. No, have you got another tune? So, good. So whatever is your family tune, make sure you sing your family. It's nice to know a number of you also sing it through, which is nice.
Yeah.
So, now we come to Kiddush. And I've got to, because we know the question that we always refer to for saying that is, why is this night different from all other nights? So paraphrasing that question, why is this Kiddush different from all other Kiddushes? Because you could argue, okay, we're all ready with Kosher Pesach and everything else. But actually, any biblical Yom Tov we make Kiddush. Shabbos we make Kiddush. Rosh Hashanah we make Kiddush. Shavuos we make Kiddush. Sukkot we make Kiddush. So, essentially, is it just the same as how you would introduce your Yom Tov meal? Obviously, we've got a lot more to say because it's Pesach. But it's just that we were Kosher Pesach. No, this is Pesach. Everything's different on Pesach. So a number of differences with your Kiddush. Normally, like we do Shabbos morning when you're in Pinner and elsewhere, I can make the Kiddush, you all listen to me, and the only one that needs to have the right amount of wine in the cup is me, because I'm doing it on your behalf. And those wonderful little tots that we have are sufficient. We all know on Seder that ain't going to wash. You've all got to have the required amount of wine or grape juice. Okay. Now, I, the reason why I say wine or grape juice, and my youngest son, who likes to be very frum, there's nothing wrong with that, but he can't take the wine. After two cups of wine, he's a goner, right, Elise? And I say to him, Rafi, I'm your dad. You know, I know a thing or two about this stuff, being a rabbi. It is perfectly halachically acceptable. If you're not going to go the distance and make it through, don't get all frummy from the word go and have just wine, or you can have low alcohol wine. You've got to make sure this is the first of the four cups of wine. Do you remember your Kiddush is actually cup one, okay? Now, in cc's, if that's how you measure it out, it's 86. You're going to like this, so those who aren't familiar with this idea. 86 is the numerical value of the Hebrew word kos.
Ah.
Yes, and kos means cup. I'll tell you something else that's interesting. Most people, if you say to them, for how many years were the Jews in Egypt? They say 210 years before we came out of the slavery. That is true, but we weren't slaves for 210 years. We were in Egypt for 210 years. Guess how many years were actually slaves? 86, right? Yeah, and at the beginning of the Seder, as we're going to see shortly, we're coming at the point of view before the redemption when we're slaves waiting to leave, okay? Where we still haven't escaped, even though physically we're no longer slaves, but we're still trapped in Egypt on the night that we're reenacting the night of the Paschal sacrifice. Okay, fine. So, what's difference number one? You've all got to have your own cup of wine, stroke grape juice, with the right amount of wine in it. There are different opinions, but the most lenient one is depending on whether you do empirical or, I'm not going decibel me all these years. So if it's in fluid ounces, it's 3.3 or 86 cc, depending on how you, yeah, fine. Okay, right, so that's difference number one. Okay, that you've all got your own cup. And difference number two, many have the custom to therefore say it all together rather than relying on one person doing it. You say it all together, you sing it all together, okay? What's difference number three? This whole leaning business, okay? Now, I once heard, oh, you're leaning so you don't choke. So it's all right to choke at other times of the year. Right? So what's this business? On Seder night, you lean. Now, what's the usual reason that's given for leaning?
Freedom.
Now, Pippa, you are right, except I don't understand that reason. I'll give you an explain to you. If I want to sit nice and comfortably having a drink, I do not do this. So you're right, but it doesn't. What do you mean, freedom? So your idea of freedom is to kind of contrive a posture where you're going to do this. Now, you might want to put a cushion there just to make it. But even so, would you normally, if you're feeling really relaxed, go like this? Of course you wouldn't. So, but the rabbi says it's a sign of freedom. It is a sign of freedom. Because how do we make sense of that reason? I'm not going to tell you now. I'm going to keep going to build it up. Right. Now, those who come to my ladies' year will know that I often say, sometimes rabbis can perhaps forget themselves, you know, sometimes and go on a bit longer than they're supposed to, and sometimes kind of go off the track a little bit. So I often say to them, if I don't answer that question, put me back on track. Don't I, man? I always say this, right? I think I usually do get back on track, yeah. But I will come back to this because there are other aspects of this idea of the leaning that we need to deal with. But okay, so we've already seen four differences, actually. Number one, this is not just Kiddush, it's the first cup of wine. Number two, everybody says it. Number three, you've all got to have, we're all going to be super from, not just under this top business. You've all got to have your 86 cc's or 3.3 fluid ounces. And the leaning business. Okay? And then we go into Kiddush. And of course, Kiddush is all about sanctifying, proclaiming the holiness of the day. So of course, we proclaim the holiness of Pesach, referred to as Zaman Cheiruseinu, the time of our freedom. Okay? And then, of course, we not only do the Kiddush, are you all using this one? You are, so just keep it simple. Page 7, unless it's Saturday night, you've got your extra Havdalah stuff, that doesn't apply this year, you make the Brocha Shehechianu, because we've made it to another Pesach, thank God. We're celebrating that we've made it, God has allowed us to arrive at this time. Fine. Now, so are we all on page 7? Great. So we make Kiddush. What are we now going to do is wash the hands without a blessing. Because this is simply the idea that food is going to be touched. Cleanliness is next to godliness. Okay, so we wash in the traditional way. Now again, different customs. Sometimes it's only the leader. I can see Tina. Good. I've got to make sure Tina's happy with what I'm saying. Yeah, fine. So maybe it's just the leader because he's the one. Or dare I say she's the one? It could be a female. I don't know. Who's going to distribute or everybody? Whatever your custom is. But then we take the green vegetable carapace. Yeah. And we dip the carapace, yes? Okay. And then we break the middle matzah. Before we go any further, why are we dipping this vegetable in salt water? And the usual traditional answer that's given is to arouse the curiosity of the children. I don't know about you, I think a fair few adults might be thinking. Now you could just say, but it's Pesach. That's what you do. It's carapace. You dip it. And that's what we do. Hold on a minute. First of all, why should it be called carapace? Why dip then? Don't know about you, but if I want to dip into something, maybe some nice sweet chili sauce, something, you know. So if this is the idea of dipping, showing freedom, well, at this point in the reenactment of the story, we ain't free. We are slaves. In a minute, we're going to talk about eating the matzah as the bread of affliction. And we actually say, now we are slaves. So we ain't dipping because of choice, you know, appetizers. No, that's not the why we're dipping at all. Why is it called carapace? And why are we doing it at that stage? And why does it have to be a vegetable? Of all the, you know, why can't it come? I know, did they do kosher Pesach nachos? They probably don't because it probably won't work. Yeah. So why a vegetable? Good question. Now, the good thing, because I'm giving you all these answers, that Marjorie and I know the team who do the magazine are already putting the magazine together. And I've done a little bit about little things for you to know you can share. So I'm not going to cover what I cover there. There I talk about the egg, right? But carapace isn't in that article, so I'm going to share it with you now. So, carapace is a word which is in our Bible. It only occurs once in the entire Bible. And do you know where it occurs? It occurs in the book of Esther. And it's talking about the king who, when he made these elaborate parties across the empire, particularly in Shushan, the capital, his tapestries were made of the finest wool and the hangings and the drapes and what have you. And it says that the material is called carapace. So our commentator Rashi says, where's carapace from? The first time we come across it, it is the material of fine wool used for making what? Joseph's coat. That's where we first come across the concept of carapace in the Torah. For making Joseph's coat. You say, yeah, but right, Joseph's long before Pesach. And what's that got to do with slavery? No. So here's the incredible answer. And I appreciate that. I am supposed to stop around 1 o'clock, so I'm going to make this a bit quicker. Incredible answer. What did the brothers say as the lie to their father that Joseph isn't coming back after they sold him as a slave? They dipped the carapace, the material of the coat, into the blood of the goat to say that he'd been killed by an animal. What did that lead to as going down to Egypt? Because where was Joseph sold as a slave? To Egypt. So the beginning of the Pesach story is not when we start saying we were slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt. No. Act 1, scene 1 is the dipping of this carapace. Now, what did they do with Joseph when they decided they were going to sell him? What did they do before they did that? They put him in a pit. Where is a pit? Below ground. What's the brocha you make on vegetables? Who creates the fruit of the... Ah! So it's not just, oh, we do this funny little thing. I don't know. No. Very deep ideas going on here. And the way my... Forgive me if you've heard me do this. And I do a terrible impression. I learnt this from my teacher, Rabbi Isaac Bernstein, at Hughes College many, many years ago. And you said the following. Before we talk about how we get out, how did we get in the first place? That's the way you said it. Was that pretty good, Dory? You remember? You said, how did we get in the first place? We sold our brother as a slave. Therefore, Act 1, Scene 1, we're reminding how the whole mess started in the first place. That's what kind of makes sense now.
Okay. It's a bit Irish, isn't it?
Yes. There you go. He was a proud Irishman, was Rabbi. Right. So now we can understand why it's from the ground. Now we understand why it's salt water, because it's sad and it's bitter and it's a horrible thing that we did. And that now we understand why it's a prelude to the next part. Because there, what were the family doing? Showing disregard for a member of their family. So what do we do to correct that? The rabbis say that the words we're about to say, after we've broken the middle matzah, were what they used to say in Egypt. This is our poor meal, and yet we invite people to come and share it with us. Not this shunning somebody. The tikkun, as we call it, the correction, is that we all make sure everybody has a say. Then we're going to come back to that in a moment. But before we do that, that's why we've got the physical... We could have just had the broken mats already on the table. No, we physically break it for a number of reasons. Number one, to show that at this point, we've got to mend what's not right with our situation. Yeah? Things are broken in the world. Similar idea to when the chosan at a wedding stamps on the glass. Yeah? Things are broken. But we look forward to the time in the future where the bigger blessing will be. So that's why you break the smaller piece, which is the one you keep. What do you do with the bigger piece? You hide it. And so if you've got grandchildren, whoever, family members, the idea being we're looking forward to that hidden time that we're yet to experience in the future where the greater blessing, because then that piece of matzah later represents the afikoman, which is the last thing we eat. At the moment, we're all starving hungry, aren't we, at this point? Because, you know, Seder night is that time where it's a long time before you actually get to the food. At least you've had a bit of carapace, but that's not very much. Okay, a bit of celery, a bit of potatoes, not going to get you very far. Fine. Anyway, so we've broken the middle matzah, and then we say the declaration on page 8, this is the bread of affliction, okay? Now, it is true that on Seder night, unless your Hebrew is your mother tongue and your mode of communication and is fluent, and I'm saying this as an Orthodox rabbi, when it comes to the telling of the story part, not the prayers, obviously we say prayers in Hebrew, the telling of the story, you must do it in English if that's the language you understand. The whole idea of Seder night is to engage in a conversation about these issues that are coming out of Egypt and freedom. And if you're doing a whole load of, oh, yeah, you haven't got a clue what it's talking about, you haven't fulfilled your obligation. So normally when you come to shul, even if you're not quite sure what the prayers mean, actually we're discussing this in the Gemara here, yeah, there's a kind of get out we have. It doesn't apply to any of the wonderful ladies of Pinner. But you may sometimes go to shuls where sometimes people aren't doing much praying. They're doing a lot of talking. I know it doesn't happen in Pinner, but trust me, it does happen in other places. Yeah? Yep. Yet we're told that because you're in an environment of what we call tefillah but sibul, so those who are praying are kind of doing it for everybody else, and it still counts that you showed up and you did your little bit right. Seder, I'm sorry to say, it doesn't work like that. Seder, you've got to understand what's going on and be an active participant of what is going on. Okay? And that's why, on the right-hand side, the language of this declaration, once we've hidden the bigger piece of matzah, and then we've got the smaller piece, which is with the other two pieces, which, by the way, the reason why we need three, one of the reasons why we need three matzahs, is because, you know, normally on Shabbos, when you do with your challahs, you've got to have whole challahs. You need two of them. Well, if you've already broken one, then we need two separate, complete pieces of matzah in order to do our hamotzi later. And also there's the blessing on matzah. That's why we need at least three, because one of them is going to get broken. We need two whole ones, okay? There are other reasons, but we'll stick with that for the moment. Now, but on page 8, look at the second paragraph. That looks like Hebrew, which is not Hebrew. It is the language of Aramaic. So notwithstanding what I've just said about doing it in a language you understand, even if you are a Hebrew speaker, the language of this bit is in Aramaic. Why? Because at this point in the story, we are identifying our current situation with what it was like for the Jews before they left Egypt, where redemption had not yet happened. They were still in exile. They were still experiencing pain. And the reality is, look at what's going on in the world at the moment. My goodness me. Okay? And we want peace for the entire world, not just for Israel. Of course we want peace for Israel. We want to be in a situation where people are having to go to bomb shelters and the psychological damage of all that's going on. And, you know, the news doesn't seem to be interested in the effect on Israeli society. A war that Israel did not want. A war that is affecting so many people. And even though I'm wearing this type of yarmulke here, kippah, is associated with those who are religious Zionists. So I believe in the importance of Medinat Israel. And I believe that when we came back in 1948, that has religious significance. But we'll all agree that we're not yet enjoying the peace. And we're not yet all enjoying the way of life we would like to truly have in the land of Israel. In that sense, we're looking forward to a future for Israel that they were looking forward to before they left Egypt. That they'd go to a land where nobody would be persecuting anybody. And people would be truly free. So we are identifying with that plight. And how do we identify? What's the way we identify with being in exile? That we're not using the language of Hebrew. Because we can't all speak Hebrew. And what was the vernacular, the language at the time that the rabbis put together this structure of the Haggadah? Aramaic, the language of the Talmud. It represents the language of exile. Just like Yiddish represents the language of exile if you're from Eastern Europe. Or Ladino if you're Sephardi. These Jewish versions of a language... Say again?
Or Arabic.
Or Arabic, exactly. Yeah. So therefore, that's why this is in Aramaic, as if to say, before we go into how we'd like things to be, before we go into the wondrous redemption that we're going to read about, our reality is we're waiting for redemption. And that's why we say, in the English, with a broken piece, this is the bread of affliction. To the Jews at the time in Egypt, it meant that they still weren't free and still weren't out of Egypt and didn't have much to eat. But it also represents to us... The bread relates to all those who are going through pain and poverty and difficulty. So we are eating at this point because that's our reality, which we are kind of paralleling with what their reality was. So you say, this is the bread of affliction with our forefathers ate in the land of Egypt. All who are hungry, let them come and eat. All who are needy, let them come and celebrate Pesach with us. Now we are here, next year may we be in the land of Israel. Now we are slaves, next year may we be free. Notice I didn't say the word men because it means men and women. Old-fashioned translation. May be free. Now, you can ask the obvious questions. Why are we saying all who are hungry come and eat? It's a bit late to say that when you're already sat there. You should have already invited people. Whoever is going to come to your Saviour, surely they're already there. Right? And it's Yom Tov. You can't pick up the phone. What do you mean all who are hungry? They're already there or they're not there. Very powerful answer. Because back in the days that we had the temple... And we brought the Paschal sacrifice. On the afternoon that that Paschal sacrifice was brought, everybody was assigned to be with a group of people, whether it be their family or extended family or community. So nobody was left out. Nobody was left out. In fact, when we read, we'll soon read about the preparations coming this Shabbos, Shabbat HaChodesh, with the first laws of Pesach. It says, each household... has to make sure that anybody that you know who's not connected to a Paschal sacrifice, they need to be part of your Seder. That's where we get the idea from. Make sure everybody's got a Seder to go to. And the reason why we say at this point is because they may very well be people who still don't have a Seder, even if we don't know who they are. Right? There may be still very people who are unaccounted for. It's who the Lubavitcher Rebbe used to call the four sons. He's talking about the fifth son. The fifth son isn't even at the Seder table. Okay? At least the one that's wicked might be saying, what's all this about? But that person is sat there, engaging. Yeah? But the person's not even there. So we recognise what we're about to do is enter the story that we'd like to see fulfilled. At the moment, it's not. And one of the signs of that is there may still very well be people who are impoverished, people without a Seder. And that's where we say, now we are here, next year may we be in the land of Israel. And what we mean by that is not that we'll please God have a nice holiday in Tel Aviv or whatever, which is nothing wrong with that. What we mean is... all of us together, the Jewish people in the land of Israel, which is why even in Israel they say these words, because they may be there, but we're not. We're not yet all the ingathering of everybody. Because we're told that when the redemption happens in the future, it will be a complete redemption for everybody. You may know that when we came out of Egypt, Sadly, only a fifth of the potential number that could have left Egypt left Egypt. 80% died in Egypt. Do you know that? Yeah? By the way, that's one of the reasons why we say, the Torah says we left armed. The word for armed is chamoshim, but it also means only a fifth actually came out. Hence also the idea that the fifth son represents those who last time weren't saved. Please God, in the future, they will be. Okay? And then we come to the four questions. Okay? I've got 5 minutes. So at least we'll do the four questions in the next few minutes. but the four questions, to be honest, are not really questions at all. All right? First of all, don't get me wrong, it's nice that we get the youngest to do them. It's great. But let's just look at, seemingly, what they're saying. All right? Now, funny enough, you're all using this edition, yeah? But there are actually newer editions even within this edition, right? I'm just wondering, and I've seen a newer edition that does not translate Manish Tana as why. Has anybody, just out of curiosity, got an edition of this that does not translate it as why is this night different? Or they're probably all from the same batch from the year dot. There was a new...
Wherefore.
Well, wherefore is another... You're using the old-fashioned one, that's right, yeah. Well, wherefore is an old-fashioned way of saying why. Wherefore, I used to think, you know, with Romeo and Juliet, right... She's actually said, why are you here? Not, you know, where are you? Because, you know, where are you? So it's another way for why, but there is another way of translating man.
What?
Okay, but there's also another way of translating it, which actually shows that these are not really questions at all. They are observations, right? Why? Because first of all, let's think about it. If this youngster hasn't got a clue what's going on, how do they already know that there's dippings to happen they haven't even seen? They've only seen one. And one of the questions is, on all of the nights we don't even dip up, tonight twice. Oh, so you know about the other dipping, do you? Mr. Clueless. Right? Okay? And, yeah. And also, knows that we're going to have bitter herbs. You don't have the bitter herbs, yeah? You're not eating the bitter herbs. Okay? So, really, this is kind of a deliberate, scripted point in the proceedings, where actually these observations are made on behalf of all of us. But so that nobody should feel inadequate or ignorant or whatever, the little one doing it on all of them. Well, of course the kids have got to learn this. We know this stuff, right? Right? We of course we knew before we came and saw Rabbi Kahn the carapaces about Joseph. Of course we know all that because we are the ones to help the young. But the truth is there may be people who've never been to a seder who don't know this stuff. So the youngest child is really a foil to get the conversation going. Right? Rather than putting anybody on the spot saying, oh, so tell me why this. Well, I think ask him. The youngest is a way of it's, yes, you get nachas and everything else, but actually to get the conversation going. Right? And according to some opinions, Manish Tana does not mean why is this night different. It's an explanation of how this night is different. And where do I get this from? When you walk into shul, there's a prayer we say, that we say, how good are these tents and dwelling places? And what's the opening word? Ma. Not why is this a good place? How good? And there are certain editions of this that say, how different is tonight from all? And this is why. Because if you think about it, some of these questions never get an answer. So the first one, on all the nights, we can either eat leavened bread or matzah. But tonight only matzah. Now, what this question is not asking is why we're having matzah. That's a different question. We get an answer to that. Because we left Egypt in such a hurry, there wasn't time for the dough to rise. Although, interestingly enough, 2 minutes ago, we gave a very different answer, that it's the bread of affliction, right? But that's not the question the youngest is asking, or asking on everybody's behalf to get the conversation going. The question is, on all of the night, if I want to have matzah and normal bread, I can. But tonight, the only type of bread I can have is matzah. So what's wrong with normal? So if you want to say, you know why we eat matzah? Because we left it in such a hurry. Fine, that's an answer for having matzah. But why have we got to go blitz on every little bit of chometz in the entire world? Chometz that's normally fine. Challah, cake, we love it. And yet for that duration of Pesach, it's an absolute no-no. Is that question answered on Seder night? No, we're told why we ate matzah, but not why we can't have chometz. You're expecting an answer to that in this book? You ain't going to get it. So where will the answer come from? As we approach the end of my first... Yes, thank you, Mrs. Clement, I know that cough. Second one, okay, Morrow. So you could argue that at least the youngest... Well, you've got the Seder play, haven't you? So the Morrow... Although they're not eating it yet, how do they... And, you know, and even then, when do we give the answer about the Morrow? By then, the little one's going to be asleep because you've got... You know, it's just before the meal. And by then, you know, a lot of people tend to be flagging. And so, right? So really, we're kind of mapping out the topics that if the Haggadah doesn't discuss them, yeah, who's going to discuss them? We do. We've got to discuss them, okay? So we need to deal with not just the question of why we eat matzah, but why no chametz? Why have we got to endure bitter herbs? Why dipping twice? So again, this clueless person obviously knows that we've already dealt with the dipping of how we got in, so you probably work out, you know when the other dipping is? Before we get out. Because what did we do with the Paschal sacrifice? We dipped the hyssop into the blood and smeared, seems a good Yiddish word, on the doorpost. That's the second, what's the second dipping represents. And so I'll deal with that answer very quickly before we go into the lunch, and about the leaning. Okay? And at least you've got plenty to take into your seder then in that case, without me going too much over time and eating into your lovely lunch. Okay? Right. So, Okay, so we've dealt with the second dipping, so why the leaning? And the answer is like this. When did the rabbis formalise, until a certain point in history, Jewish people just understood there were certain texts from the Torah that they had to talk about on Seder night and had to engage with those around them to talk about the coming out of Egypt. The problem is, not everybody knew how to do that. And when the future of Judaism was in danger because of persecution, the terrible, particularly the Roman persecutions and the Hadrianic persecutions, were terrible loss of life and trying to eradicate Judaism and decrees against us observing our faith, the rabbis had to set down what we call the oral law, what we've got today that's been passed down. So they formalised the Haggadah during the Roman occupation period. Now, Romans, when they wanted to sit, they didn't sit on chairs like this. They reclined on a chaise longue, which was designed for reclining, and they would have a little table in front where, you know, somebody would feed them the grapes. So for them, that represented freedom. For those living at that time, that's what a free person looks like. Now, we don't sit on a chaise longue on Saturday night, so that's why the symbolic idea of they are the free people, that's what freedom looks like. And just to conclude this section, what that teaches us is that Saturday night is not only about what happened in one historical period. When we talk about the tyrant of Pharaoh, we could have just easily be talking about Hitler. We could just as easily be talking about Khomeini. In other words, there are patterns to Jewish history. Right. And what is freedom? Where people are no longer persecuted, no matter what era they're living in. Okay, where they are free to observe their faith and to have their relationship with God not compromised by those who try to do us down. So what we see about Seder night is not only about the coming out of Egypt, it's about the redemptions that we are waiting for. And that's what we actually say in the bracha before we have the meal, very, very appropriate as we're about to have the meal, where just very briefly, before we finish, and 5 minutes for me going over is a miracle. So if you just look very briefly at the blessing that we say on page 25, and this is before we go into the Seder meal, it's not about the past, we've come through that redemption, and we want it to serve as a forerunner, that just as God redeemed us then, He will redeem us in the future, which is why at the bottom of page 25, before you go into the meal, we say, and I'll read the translation on the left-hand side, "Blessed are thou, eternal Lord God, ruler of the universe, who redeemed us and redeemed our forefathers, brought us to this night to eat thereon matzah and bitter herbs. Thus may the eternal our God and God of our fathers bring us to future feasts and festivals in peace, and to the building of your city Jerusalem, and to the happiness of your service, so that we may partake there of the ancient offerings. We shall then offer to you a new song for our redemption and salvation." So the whole thing has been building up to that's what happened then, but we want the final redemption to happen, where God will redeem Israel. And with that, I think it's the appropriate time for us to have our beautiful meal, which we're going to have very shortly. So thank you very much, everybody. End of part one. Hope you enjoyed it. Thank you.
Good. Thank you very much.